Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at creating visual interest in your garden the year round, especially in the winter months. Our guest is Jeff Epping. He is the director of horticulture at Obrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Comes by every so often to visit with us. So what looks good in your garden in winter? Do you need ideas for plants with winter interest? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or post your questions and photos on our Facebook page. Love to have you do that. And again, email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jeff Epping, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here as always, Larry.
I tell you what, many gardeners do a major cleanup of their gardens in the fall, leaving it looking pretty bare. I don't do that. What are your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, the winter landscape is often sort of barren enough. And if we cut all of the interest in our garden back to the ground, what are we looking at? Mulch and snow, maybe. So, yeah, if you have seed heads on perennials, we have ornamental grasses, we have all these great plants for winter interest. And when I do my design work, I always think about what I always call the dormant season, because, you know, it's more than just winter, really. It's fall, it's early spring, and those are tough times of the year for your garden to look nice. And so if you can design with plants that have, interesting winter features, it's going to look good.
One of my friends was over for Thanksgiving with her 13-year-old daughter and her 10-year-old son. And the 13-year-old daughter, Maddie Teed, went out to the garden, the flower garden, and cut some plants and put together, well, you saw it, a very nice centerpiece for the Thanksgiving table. And it looked just wonderful with all those dried flowers.
Yeah, and it looks truly in season, doesn't it?
I mean,
if you go out and buy a fresh bouquet from the grocery store from flowers that got shipped up from Brazil or wherever, I mean, you know, it's not quite in the Thanksgiving spirit, maybe. But yeah, why not? Why not harvest those things and bring a little of the winter garden in to enjoy? I'd give a talk called Bark, Berries, Grasses, and Beyond, and it's all about winter interest, because that's oftentimes those types of plants that are looking great. So, you know, trees and even shrubs with really nice bark, like red twig dogwood is, poster
beautiful
child for that, right? But there's all sorts of different plants we can use. And fruit, so we have a lot of fruiting shrubs, a lot of the viburnums, winterberry. We have, probably our number one ornamental tree in our area is the ornamental crabapple. And, they have obviously wonderful flowers during the season, but I really select my crabapples on how great the fruit look during the winter, because they look like little ornaments all winter long. And then come spring, the birds have something to eat as they migrate through and clean them up for you. And then, of course, ornamental grasses. What a great group of plants. Most of them are really tough. We got grasses for shade. We got grasses for sun. And in the fall and winter, they're the ones that really take the show. So during the rest of the season, they're just kind of there doing their thing. But in the fall and winter, they look fantastic. So, yeah, leave all that stuff up. No sense in cutting it back. That's the time you want to enjoy it the most, right?
Well, one of the cool things I think at Obrick Gardens, when you walk through the gardens, you have benches that I think they add a lot in the wintertime, just
Absolutely.
Leaving those benches out.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're always, and I do this at home, too. I'm thinking about what is the sort of structure in your garden. So benches, arbors, even, fire pits, they're functional that way, but, make them look good. We have not only benches, but different garden furniture, and nothing drives me crazier than to see those, crummy $10 plastic chairs from the big box stores, going out the door into gardens when, you could have some, it's like nice natural wood or stone and something that looks organic and really fits into the garden. And then, we have all sorts of winter containers that we can put
together.
Seasonal
urns.
Oh, absolutely. Bird baths, all those things. I will say, if a little's good, a lot is not always better, though.
No, you're right.
You can kind of overdo it. You want to blend them into the garden and garden art too. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff out there. Every year when I go up to Art Fair on the Square and see some of the great, you know, pieces up there, I think, wow, that would be great to have in the garden. But again, just a smattering here and there. If you really love to collect a lot of those things, maybe rotate them in and out, you know, put them in your garage and then bring them back out. And rather than try to, you know, fill your whole garden up with them, you don't want it to look kind of like a circus out there. You know? But I'm kind of a purist. I'm a plant guy, you know, a plant geek. And that's what I focus on. And that's what we've done at Old Brick over the years. So if you come out and take a look around right now, I think the garden is as beautiful now as it is in the summer. I was just talking to one of my staff this morning. I said, you know, I took a walk a couple days ago and beautiful morning. It was beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. It's very different than the summer garden, but I think really equally as beautiful. And that's because we've worked at it over the years. You know, it's not something that just happened. We're always you know, looking at the garden with a critical eye and, you know, what is it that we need here, you know? And so I work with the Hort staff and we analyze and then make improvements, and every year is a little different, hopefully a little better. And you know, we go forward. So that's all these things you can do in your own garden. So if you're looking for ideas, you know, come on out to Old Brick, take a walk.
And you can also go to our Facebook page today, too, because you shared some great photos with us, including some seasonal urns and other containers. Maybe talk a little about that.
Yeah, you bet. You know, during the summer, again, we use a lot of terracotta. We're probably over 300 containers throughout the garden, if not more. But then we, you know, tuck most of those away during the winter. But we have concrete or stone, or, you know, what the really fancy word is, reconstituted limestone containers. They're kind of a concrete mixture, but they're very beautiful. And, you know, we have live plants in them during the season, but at this time of year, then we remove all those plants a little bit earlier, obviously, in the soil, and then we actually stuff them with chicken wire, believe it or not. It's real cheap. And you wrap a little stone or brick at the bottom to kind of keep it, you know, have enough weight in there and keep it all centered in there. And then you just put your dried materials right in there, and you can use evergreen materials, and most of that material you can harvest from your own garden. That's what we do at Old Brick. You know, we bring in a little from here and there, but most of it's coming right out of the garden. Doing a little pruning at the same time that we need to do anyway. And so things like white pine and juniper and boxwood and spruce and all those give you a nice little base work. And then from there you use the ornamental grasses and cut some prunings from some of the fruiting species, viburnums, crab apples, whatever. And just work those all in together. And, you know, for the holidays, you might mix a few lights in there.
Yeah, have some lights.
And yeah, at home, I don't know if there was pictures I sent Jill from my own home garden as well. And I often do the ones right out front of the house and kind of mess with those during the winter. It's kind of fun.
Now, Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Started out talking about gardening for winter interest, but we'll take other gardening questions as well, maybe houseplant questions even. Call in at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. And email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Or post a photo and question on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. There are some big changes. Well, I'm thinking about it before I forget. There are some big changes coming to the Old Brick Gardens. Talk about those.
Yeah, you bet. Well, we're fundraising right now. We're getting pretty close to the end of that, which is awesome, but we're still raising a few funds to build a new education center. And if you know about Old Brick and have ever taken a class, you become aware of how many children's and adult classes that we put on at the garden. And it's fun, and people really are hungry for more, you know, more knowledge about all things gardening and related. So over the years, we've just, you know, we've got a couple rooms, and it just is tough to hold, you know, classes. And as they become more popular, we don't have enough space. So a new education center is being built. Hopefully ground will be We'll break ground next fall.
Mm-hmm.
So about a year from now. And it's a beautiful facility. It has three separate rooms that can be divided into three or opened up into a bigger space.
Will this be attached to the current building, or will it be separate?
It will. It's actually just inside the garden. So if you're familiar with Olbrich, you come out into the garden from the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be right in that vicinity. So it'll attach to the existing building, which is a beautiful, is a beautiful sort of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture. Stuart Gallagher was the architect of that building years ago. He's since passed, but we're trying to keep in touch with those roots and really make it feel as part of that design. So it's really a cool space. There's going to be actually an upper deck for people to come and sit and enjoy the garden from a different vantage point, looking out.
Really cool.
Yeah, towards the Great Circle there. It's really gonna fulfill a need that we've had for quite some time, and we're seeing over 300,000 visitors a year come to the garden, and our current visitor center was designed for 100,000, so you can imagine we're just kind of busting at the seams everywhere. So this is really gonna be a nice addition to the garden for our visitors.
And I'm gonna test you on a few other things relating to the garden, but Sue in Milwaukee has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about coral bells. I grow them, and every year at least one or two seem to shrivel up and die. Now, their crowns also seem to sort of push themselves out of the soil, and I was wondering about compost around these crowns, if that would help them survive better or grow. What can you tell me about that?
You bet. Well, you're not alone in that, in losing coral bells from time to time. We do a pretty good job with that, too. And the thing is, there's some that are hardier than others. And there's a native coral bell, Heuchera americana, which is now being used in a lot of the coral bell breeding. So the more genes that you get into these cultivars, the better they are for us in the northern tier states, at least. So look for those. Oftentimes the best nurseries will give you a little heads up on sort of what the parentage is, or you do a little research on internet and you'll find out. But so those crowns that are, as they grow, they sort of kind of come up out of the ground more and more. One thing you might do in the spring divide those and plant them a little deeper. That'll help a little bit. I wouldn't do it now. So now, like you say, just a little extra mulch isn't a bad idea. Once the ground freezes, put a little compost maybe prior to that. And then once it freezes up, you might even throw a couple, boughs from your Christmas tree or something after the holidays, cut that up and throw it over the top. And basically what you want to do is keep them frozen during the winter rather than freeze-thaw, which is what oftentimes is tough on plants and might even kill them. So that would be your... Yeah, that would be your best bet.
Yeah, and wait till the ground's frozen before you do that, right?
Yeah, you could put that compost you were mentioning around them, kind of just to bury the crown a little bit, and then once it freezes up, throw the boughs on, because then it keeps it frozen, and that's what you want. Yep.
Yeah.
Just as you would do with, say, hybrid tea roses, that sort of thing.
Sue, does that help out?
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller, and Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. On this edition of Garden Talk, we started talking about creating winter interest in your garden with our guest, Jeff Epping of Olbrich Botanical Gardens, but we'll take other questions as well relating to your plants. Maybe they're house plants, maybe they're outside plants. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. I want to go back to the construction. What's the timeline for completion of the new center?
That's a good question. I know we start construction, or the plan is to start construction next fall. It'd probably be about a year, I think, until it's completely finished.
Okay, so a year.
Yep. And as part of that process, too, they're actually building a new greenhouse range because our greenhouses are kind of out of date and not the most energy efficient in the world. So we're going to make them more so that way. They're putting in movable benches, all that sort of thing, to maximize production, because we try to grow all the plants that we use out in the gardens, right in house. And then we also, like for our flower shows that are, one opens tomorrow. We try to grow all those plants in house as much as possible too. So that'll be a nice, update to the infrastructure and the support of the gardens.
You mentioned that show that starts tomorrow, and I love that show. The trains that run through this, it's fantastic. Talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. I know Joe put some pictures up of that. It's a great theme. The guys decided to do something different this year. We'll have the railroad trains, as we always do, because we can't do without those. Everybody loves them, especially the kids. But surrounding all of that is sort of a Western theme or cowboy theme. So they have all sorts of fun props that they brought into the show. They have a little gold mine sifting area. They have a saloon. They actually found a old piano on Craigslist that somebody said, "Oh, you can have if you just get it out of our house." Well, it almost killed the staff getting it out of this guy's garage. But it looks awesome. And of course, they adorned it with all sorts of plants and such. And so it's really fun and different. We have a lot of succulents, agaves and yuccas and cacti. And we do have the traditional poinsettias, but we tried to go with non-traditional colors. So we have yellows and greens and orangey bracted poinsettias and such. It is really cool. I mean, we're so lucky to have such a creative staff at the garden. They just had a lot of fun with it.
I bet they did. Every year I look forward to visiting and seeing it. And the price is certainly right.
Oh, it always is. Yeah, right. No, it's all the proceeds from the show go, right back into the operation. So, our members preview party is tonight from 3 to 6. But for non-members, tomorrow the show's show opens. So, come on out and see us before the Big Badger game, and enjoy the show. And of course, it goes all the way through New Year's Eve. So there's lots of opportunities in from now till then. I think it's 10 to 4 daily. If you have any thoughts about coming out, you can always hit our website, oldbrick.org, and get all the details about that and everything else.
Everything else. There's so many events. We may talk about some of those other events, but let's go to Cascade, Iowa, and talk with Dominique. Hi, Dominique.
Yes. My question is about hedge apples. Hedge apple trees. Mm-hmm. Been to quite a few nurseries in the area. Nobody seems to have a hedge apple plant.
Right, and you are talking about Macura. What's the other name for hedge apple? I'm blanking out right now.
Some banana tree or something.
Yeah, it's a plant that's not normally grown as a ornamental in our area. It's tough as nails, and a lot of people grow it farther west and south. And we have a couple on our property, actually not in the garden, but in where our office area is, back in that old Garver feed mill property, and they are thriving, and we harvest the big fruit from them every season and use them ornamentally. And I don't know, maybe one of our pictures might even show some stacked in one of our pots. But it's kind of a fun plant, and it's kind of a unruly grower, has thorns and such, but there actually are some cultivars of it that are thornless and selected for big fruit or the hedge apple, as you call them.
Osage orange.
Osage, thank you. Gosh, it was driving me crazy. Osage orange. So it's a fun tree. There's actually one called Cannonball, one of the cultivars, because it has such huge, huge fruit.
That'd be a fun one.
It's unusual, But it's a fun plant, and it's tough as nails. So if you have some space and don't want to be fussing.
Yeah, where do you buy
them? Well, we bought ours online, believe it or not. We just, you know, type them into Google, and they're out there. There's a nursery out west called Lawyer Nursery, and they specialized in seedling and sapling production. So I know they carry them. But you're going to have to do a little research on the internet, because it's not something I've seen at any local nurseries ever. We got ours as just tiny little plants way back when, and now they're decent-sized trees, about 20 to 30 feet tall and wide.
Yeah.
Could you grow them from the seed, from the apple?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of that, but again, look that up. And I usually it's like 3 months cold stratification, where you take the seed out of the fruit, put it in moist sand or moist peat moss in a refrigerator for about 3 months, and then sow the seed in the spring in a flat. And I'm guessing you'll have pretty good luck with that.
All right.
I buy them for they're supposed to keep spiders away. When they deteriorate, they emit a gas that kills spiders. It seemed to really work in that way.
Is that right? I can't say I know for fact or by personal
that's
experience.
A story I've never heard before,
yeah.
Dominique.
But they are kind of cool. I mean, they have a neat fragrance to them. I mean, they're not overpowering by any means, but just kind of nice, subtle, sort of
that
citrusy.
For years, that keeps them out of the garage and out of the basement. Yeah, keeps the spiders away.
Oh,
yeah.
God. So you have some larger trees around, it sounds like.
Well, I buy them at like flea markets and places like that. You know, farmer markets.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Growing up, they used to be 50 cents, and now some of them are $2 an apple.
You better get some planted and go into your own little production business there.
Thank you, Dominic. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Speaking of Facebook, Brianna in Madison wonders on Facebook if it's still too early to mulch her roses.
Yes, I would say so. We haven't had really consistently freezing temperatures, though I was looking at the forecast, and it looks like next week we may. So again, what you want to do is you could mound them now. Typically, you know, the way they do it is you mound it with soil or a well-rotted compost up to, I don't know, about a foot or so, make a little cone. Then once that freezes, which might be a week or two, then you mulch them with a, you know, marsh hay or something lightweight that will serve as a good insulator, if you will. So even I could say pine boughs or something like that's always good. So the trick again is to freeze and make them stay frozen all winter. That's the best situation. So it's a little bit early for that, but not too far off.
Not too far off. Bob emailed to say that he has dwarf arborvitae in large pots that have thrived outside during the summer. What's the best way to get dwarf arborvitae through the winter?
Right. So if they're in a pot and above ground, what you want to do is bury the pot. So you could just leave them right in the pot and just, you know, dig a hole like you were planting it, but to leave the pot on. And surround that back with soil, and you might even put a little, you know, mulch around the base. Water them good, because being evergreen, they'll lose some moisture during the winter. But that should do it. Arborvitae are pretty hardy, and sometimes you'll actually see junipers and arborvitae used in above-ground pots during the winter, sometimes spruce and even pine, and you can get away with that. But a lot of plants, you know, the root systems really are not anywhere as cold hardy as the tops.
Yeah.
You know, if something is in the ground, usually it will not get below 20, 30 degrees. Even if the ground's frozen, that's still 20, 30 degrees. Above ground, if it's minus 20, that's how cold they're going to get. And they can't take that, and the plants will die. So that's why we typically, you could use like a nursery Quonset or maybe even a garage. But the easiest way is just to dig a hole, like you're going to plant it in the pot. If it's out of sun, even better. So if on the north side, east side would be second best exposure of a house, a garage, you know, a fence, big tree, something where it stays in the shade all winter, that's even better, because then the sun won't be heating it up and such during the winter months.
I got some through the winter once. I happened to have some straw bales, and I somehow figured out how to get the straw bales around the pots.
That'd be a good way to do it too. Or if you have a big pile of leaves that you save. I do. I collect all my leaves from my garden and I pile them up in my vegetable garden. And then come spring, I mulch them up with my mower and I use them as mulch in the rest of my garden. So right now I have this big pile there, and that would be another good way too. It's just kind of stuff them in there and get them just well good and insulated. And basically what you're doing is holding the heat of the earth into that zone where you have the roots, and so they just won't get extremely cold like the top portion would.
I've got a pile in the back from my straw bale garden. So I could, I don't need to, I guess it'll probably just sit there all winter because I don't have a need for it. But that, if for those who did some straw bale gardening, that would be a way to use that sort of leftover straw that's now kind of just a mound.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's
absolutely
nothing left of it.
I actually have little little bonsais that I'm no bonsai expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I have some little Scots pines and some camassipers and that sort of thing in these shallow pots that I have out on my patio all summer long. And for the winter, those are all hardy enough. I just put them into my garage, which isn't heated or attached to my house at all. Water them in good and just leave them right there on the floor, and they're fine. I bring them back out. They don't need light even. It just it doesn't matter because they're cold, completely dormant. But it's cold, warm enough in there to keep the extreme temperatures from killing the
roots. You put a board underneath?
Or? I do. So they're they don't absorb moisture from the concrete and end up cracking on me. But I've learned the hard way on that one.
Yeah, me too.
With terracotta especially, right?
Nan on Facebook says the Osage orange or horse apple is used for fence posts because the wood is so hard.
Absolutely. Yeah, so if you go farther south and west, that tree is tough as nails and it grows well there, and it's extremely rot resistant, along with black locust is another wood that has often been used for fence posts. For the same reason. And I recall a forester telling me he loved to burn Osage orange and black locust in his wood-burning stove because it almost burned
forever.
Like coal.
Burned forever. Brenda, Brenda in Milwaukee emailed to ask for suggestions for plants that produce berries for winter interest, sun or shade.
Okay. Well, earlier I mentioned viburnum. So there is our native cranberry bush viburnum, Viburnum trilobum, or the European one is Viburnum opulus. All those are really great. I think I mentioned holly. Now, I'm not talking about the evergreen holly because those really aren't hardy for us, but Ilex verticillata, which is often called winterberry. It's a native shrub. And that has fantastic red fruits through the winter months. What else, Larry? Gray dogwood. They're good for the birds, but the birds usually pick those off before too long. Crab apples, if you have the space, I think that's a really great group. Or hawthorns. We have some beautiful, it's called green hawthorn, Crataegus viridis, which is a native species to the United States that has great fruit as well. One plant is often touted for winter fruit, which I would suggest you don't plant. My friends at the DNR will appreciate me saying this is barberry. Barberry is one that's always been used, and we used to use it too until we found out what a problem it's become, right? So if you have those, get rid of them and certainly don't plant those. But another beautiful vine is Celastra scandens, the oh my gosh. Such a plant geek. I remember all the scientific names. Bittersweet. And again, there's the Oriental bittersweet that you want to avoid, but there's the American bittersweet. And there's actually a cultivar that was developed called Autumn Revolution, which is self-fruitful, because if you know anything about bittersweet, there's male and female plants, and if you were to want fruit, you always have to plant at least one female for the fruit, but you have to plant a male so the flowers are pollinated. But with this autumn revolution, it's self-bearing. So that's a nice addition. So that's the native one. So all those are really good fruiting plants you could use.
We've got Laura in La Crescent, Minnesota, emailing to say that she's used horse apples for spiders and they work great. She cut them open first. Also, she uses dried iris seed pods as decorations inside. Are pods like these unique to irises?
Well, there's lots of really nice perennials that produce fruit like that, or pods, and some shrubs too. I think about things like Baptisia or indigo has great little pods.
Pods, yeah.
A lot of the sunflowers or Rudbeckias or black-eyed Susans, a lot of people call them. Those have great pods that last through the winter. Purple coneflower, another one. There's quite a number of.
My purple coneflowers are standing tall yet.
Are they?
I mean, they're dead, of course.
Yeah. What's cool, too, is if you leave those stand, you often see goldfinches and other seed-eating birds working at those all winter. We have a tick seed or coreopsis, and it, just recently I was out in one of our gravel gardens where we have some tall coreopsis planted, and there must have been 10 goldfinches just working away on those guys. And so that's the other reason not to cut back. All that stuff, because not only are there seeds for the wildlife, but they create a little cover, and then insects are overwintering on those as well, and the birds pick away at those, and come spring, then the insects do their thing, and they're there for another generation. So thinking about the garden not only for our visual pleasure, if you will, but for all the critters out there.
I'm trying to think of what the gravel garden looks like.
Well, again, we don't cut anything back. So in the more mature gravel gardens at Olbrich, especially the one by the herb garden there, it just looks like a beautiful little meadow with all the nice dried material still up, the ornamental grasses and seed heads of all the various herbaceous material. And then come spring is when we cut that back. And so that's when you actually see the gravel. Otherwise, the gravel is really just there to keep the weeds out and do its job and make gardening easy. In fact, I'm putting a gravel garden in my home garden right now. I'm having gravel delivered next week.
And at this time of the year?
Yeah, well, I'm getting it all ready. So spring comes, I'll plant it up. But I've been working on the groundwork for it for the last 6 weeks or so. And
what do you do?
Well, basically, the biggest thing you need to do when you establish these is to create a border around the outside. Because when I want 4 to 4.5 inches of gravel throughout the whole garden, and when it reaches the edge, I want it still to be that depth. I don't want it just to taper off into nothing. Because remember, the gravel serves as this weed barrier, basically. It'd be if a seed drops on it, that's a tough thing for that thing to get established, and they really don't very often. So we want to keep that grass. So I had to create this nice, I used limestone pieces and boulders and that sort of thing. They ripped my street to shreds this summer for 3 months and unearthed all sorts of boulders. And I think every neighbor on the block has at least 5 in their yard. So I benefited from that as well. And so to work those in. And so I have the whole perimeter established now, and we got new curb on the street side, so that's serving as that the barrier on that side. So once my gravel's in place, it's a piece of cake. Next spring, I'm just going to be planting.
And it's not just gravel. It's like a pea gravel, isn't it?
It's like a pea gravel, yeah. This is actually a quartzite chip. Comes out of Michael's Materials, a quarry in Waterloo, Wisconsin. That's what we've been using at Olbrich for years and years. But it could be a standard pea gravel, too. Basically, the main thing is it's a wash gravel, so think of like marbles in a jar, they'll always have airspace in between them. That's what's important, excuse me, because that's what keeps those weed seeds from being able to be established. No amount of moisture is held in that gravel, all that airspace, so they just have a tough time. But the plants you use are all good drought tolerant perennials, a lot of them natives. And once they get their roots down into the soil below, they're perfectly fine. And
you lay the gravel out, and then when you go to plant, you just pull some of the gravel away?
Yeah, you just kind of dig like a dog with your hands and make a little hole, push that plant in. You're talking about using like 3.5-inch or 4-inch pots, so not real big gallon stuff, but just smaller pots, quart pots they're often called. And then they take some time to root in, so you do have to be diligent about watering for the first 2 to 3 weeks or so. But once they get rooted in, during drought periods for maybe the first 2 years. And then after that, they're good. Mother Nature provides what they need, which is the beauty of it. And as I'm getting older, I'm becoming more of a lazy gardener. I need more gardens like gravel gardens.
Oh, man. Jeff Epping, our guest today. Jeff, we have Bob emailing about potted dwarf arborvitae. He says they are already in. This is the guy that emailed earlier. He emailed back about those potted dwarf arborvitae. He says they're already inside and heavy. Can he have them inside and keep them watered? So keep them in the house?
If they're in the house, I'd say no. It's a, you know, arborvitae is a temperate plant, and it needs a cold treatment to be happy. And so like any of our other shrubs or trees that lose their leaves every fall, it actually requires a cold treatment to satisfy its dormancy and then produce, you know, foliage and flowers and everything else for the next season. So it needs to have a cold treatment of, say, about 35 to 40 degrees or colder during the winter months. So if it's in the house and really hot, like it would be, I would try to transition it to a colder situation. Don't just throw it from there right out into the cold. So put it out during the day a little bit, and then if it gets real cold at night, bring it in maybe. But then you gotta tough love. Then put it out in the garage or something in a shed, and then maybe outdoors and see what happens. With that said, arborvitae are pretty fast grown and cheap. So if it doesn't work this time around because of how they were handled, but I'm guessing they'll be fine.
I highly recommend a dolly. Purchase a dolly.
If they're heavy.
He says they're heavy.
They must be big.
Yeah, they must be big. Wow. I recommend a dolly for you, Bob. Oh, Jerry in Delafield. Let's go to you next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I purchased at the year end a semi-dwarf royal and cherry tree. It was on sale. I thought it would be fun to have cherries. Mm-hmm. And when I took it home and planted it, I read the fine print, which said I need a different type of cherry tree to pollinate it. I'm looking for a recommendation on what I should purchase in the spring to plant next to my tree.
Right. And I don't know off the top of my head, I'll be quite honest, but all fruit growers, especially, you know, like Stark and some of these online catalogs, and you'll find it online, they'll tell you exactly which of probably three or more other cultivars of cherry will cross-pollinate with that, was it Royal Anne? That's very common for cherries. Pears are another one.
Yep.
A lot of apples, they may be self-fruitful, but they'll be much more fruitful if you have another variety that will cross-pollinate with. But all that information is right available online. I would guess
Steins
even the University of Wisconsin Extension probably has a publication on it as well. I know I purchased some pears recently to espalier on my garage, and I did the same thing. I just went online and looked them up because there's so many possibilities out there.
All right, there we go. And you know, you get three or so, you'll get about three or four recommendations, and and go from there.
Yep, you bet.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate your call very much. Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Give a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Larry Mueller here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Jeff Epping of Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have Jeff come by. Certainly look forward to hearing from you. If you've got a great photo, I hope you'll put it up on our Facebook page. You can email us with questions at ideas@wpr.org, or you can phone us at 1-800-642-1234. And during our little break, Jeff and I were looking at the photos that he brought along and posted up on our Facebook page, and we were laughing about that a full-size piano with all the beautiful plants on it. It looks wonderful in there amidst the trains
does, right?
And everything right? else.
I don't think a pianist would appreciate all the plants draped all over it and watering them and such, but I think it's beyond that point for this old piano.
yeah, so go to our Facebook page and take a look at the shots of the photos from Ulbricht. Steve in Broadhead has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry and Jerry. I guess I have a really quick question about some privacy plants.
Yeah.
My house backyard butts up against not a busy road, but a fairly busy road. Mm-hmm. And this winter, I'm going to be taking down the line of red pines that they have that the previous owner had planted. So I guess just want to know what you would recommend for like a hedge or something that would kind of keep our backyard a little bit more private.
And how tall?
Well, I mean the red pines or like how tall would I be looking for?
How tall what would you be looking for in terms of height?
Oh, probably about 6 feet.
About 6 feet. Okay.
And is this full sun?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you're near a roadway, and most oftentimes in our climate, that means salt spray from the roadway, cars coming by when the roads are salted, and it sprays that salt. So something like juniper would probably be your best bet. They are the most tolerant of salt spray, and they're the most drought tolerant of the evergreen type trees that we have in our area. So I would look to that group. There's quite a number of different cultivars, if you will. Some of our native juniper, Juniperus virginiana, and then there's also the Chinese juniper. And that might be another possibility, but there's blue sort of needled cultivars. There's dark green. There's some that are more open in habit, some that are a little more columnar and narrow and tight. So I would look around, and see what you can find. Typically, juniper, you don't find huge plants. If you can find 4-footers, you're probably doing good. And the other thing about juniper a lot of people don't know is that you can shear them if you want to keep them a little tighter or shorter. But, of course, when you do that, then you're looking at a little more maintenance, of course. But it sounds like if you had red pine, those things were probably, 30, 40 feet, or were they not even that
old?
Yeah,
they're pretty tall, and they're getting to the end of their life cycle. So,
they don't really make a good hedge plant because they lose their lower branches and all that. I would probably look at that group of
give you a good screening, for sure.
You know, arborvitae would be a good screening plant too that I often recommend, but with salt spray, they're not happy with that at all.
So. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Let's see. Nancy in La Crosse, we go to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Thanks for your show. I had two questions. I'll give you the simple one first, I think. I have two carnelian cherries that I've had for about 5 years, and I think they're two different varieties, but I have yet to see any fruit on them.
They
look healthy. I don't fertilize them. I just don't see any fruit.
Have you been pruning them at all?
No, nothing.
Are they flowering?
One of them is flowering a little, but not the other.
Huh. Well, that's odd. I would guess it's probably just a matter of age, and as they get a little bit older, they'll produce more flowers and fruit. That's like zone 2 plants, so there shouldn't be any problems with hardiness.
I mean, they look healthy, they look good, and I haven't fertilized them. One is maybe 6 feet tall, and the other four.
Okay, so they're still fairly small then.
Do you need do you need to have two varieties to?
No, not that I've ever noticed. Yeah, no, we have them planted here, there, and everywhere around the garden, as well as a beautiful hedge around the sunken garden. We've never
had
any. And those are older plants, of course, but yeah, they don't fruit at a real early age. I know that.
Okay.
So I would just
give them another year or two.
Just be patient.
Okay. So the other one is, I have a prairie that's about, maybe 50 yards long, and I thought a variety of mix from Neil DeBeau, and it is about most of the grasses and sunflowers, maybe 50, 60 species. It is very tall, like 5 feet tall, many of them. So I'm wondering, is there a way that I can keep it a little shorter, because it's on a hillside, without damaging any of the plants or anything?
Yeah. What are the tall ones? Are they all tall?
Well, some of the goldenrod is tall. I have some rye grass that's tall, and some varieties of sunflowers that are really tall.
So are you
it's hard to see the rest of the plants because these are really thriving. We have kind of clay soil.
Right.
So I don't know if there's a way to...
So you don't want all the plants, sure. You just want those handful that you just mentioned, basically.
Right.
Yeah, well, you could say, I don't know, mid-June or something, go in there and cut those back by two-thirds or a half, and more than likely they'll still... come up and flower for you, especially if they're later growing, later flowering species.
Okay.
Other than that, you're not going to want to spray them with a growth regulator or anything crazy like that.
No, I don't want you to crazy.
No.
I typically burn in the spring because I like to keep them up for the birds and things in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if I burnt at a different time, if that would affect it at all.
I don't think so. No, I don't think it would affect the overall growth. I mean, that's sort of a plants that are genetically programmed to grow like that. So, I mean, other than doing that cutting back sort of thing, I don't know of any way to do it. And there's actually, from a horticulture standpoint, I'm saying if you had a perennial border, there's those tricks where you cut back your phlox, by I don't know what the date is, June 15th or something like that, and thin them out, and then they'll be sturdier and stronger stemmed and not as tall. And so you certainly can do that with any of those perennials. And like I say, if it's a spring blooming thing, probably not, but those are typically more short anyway.
Yeah.
And you can do that, but you'll lose the flower. So if it's midsummer to later, cutting them back in the first month or two, I think still give them plenty of time to form. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and won't hurt the plants. I mean, I like them. They're just really tall.
No, yeah. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you might want to just experiment too. If you have the same plant in 10, 12 different places, do a little experimentation the first year or two and keep some notes, what you did, and you'll soon find out.
They're mixed. I mean, it's the whole area is mixed of everything.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, have fun with that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Fran in Racine, your turn. Hi, Fran.
Oh, hi. I'm calling because I heard your guest talk about the gravel not being conducive to weed growth, and I have a patio that is the best weed bed that you've ever seen. Everything comes up in it. Queen Anne's lace, thistles, dandelions, and it's maddening, and I don't like to use toxic sprays. So did I use the wrong kind of gravel, or is there a special kind of gravel?
What's the depth of your gravel?
Probably about 3 inches, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely, there's a difference. So in these gravel gardens, like Larry and I were saying, think about pea gravel, basically, is about the size, whether it be the quartzite chip, which is a broken gravel, or the pea gravel. But remember, every piece of gravel is about the same size. And when we're talking 4 to 5 inches deep, that's pretty big when you're talking about a small piece of gravel and keeping the airspace in there. Most people who have used gravel as a mulch, it's a different story. And oftentimes they put black plastic underneath it or a landscape fabric, which are two of my least favorite things in the world to do because they're so bad for plants.
I did that, but it's still...
Yeah, well, what probably has happened and can happen in a gravel garden if you're not diligent is you need to... You know, we said leave your perennials up in the fall, right, Larry? We were talking about that. But in the spring on a gravel garden, you clean that up and you get as much debris out of that as humanly possible. We actually use a little blower, electric blower, and a rake, two-person job, and blow all that organic matter out. Because the last thing in the world we want is organic matter building up in the gravel and filling in all those pore spaces with organic material, which is basically starting to form like a soil. That's where you're going to get your weed seeds to germinate. So oftentimes when people have mulched with the plastic or the landscape fabric, they're not real diligent about cleaning up all that organic matter every year. And eventually the organic matter fills in all the spaces in between the gravel. Then you get weed seeds germinating in that, like you mentioned. So that's the difference.
Yeah. So you need to probably replace... If you want to keep that, you almost need to replace the gravel.
You almost do, yeah. It's almost impossible to get the organic material out of it if you don't.
And get that plastic out of there. I made that mistake once many years ago, and then when I had to get it out, it was a mess.
And a lot of people did it because that was the practice at the time, and it seemed like a good idea. But when you think about it... no water gets through that stuff. No organic matter ever gets to replenish the soil. It's not good for plants.
Bonnie in Milwaukee up next, but we're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us. Then we'll be back with Jeff Epping to talk with Bonnie and maybe with you. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us here on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We've talked about creating winter interest for your garden, but taking any kind of gardening question that you may have, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Bonnie in Milwaukee, thanks for waiting.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a suggestion for large outdoor pots. I have two on my patio that have been there for 6 years, deciduous shrubs, and I wrap them in a couple layers of bubble wrap and a bungee cord. They've done beautifully.
Oh.
All right, there you go.
I don't know if they should, but they do.
Don't tell them.
Thanks, Bonnie. So... bubble wrap. And so is
bubble
it the big bubble wrap or
the
is it
big bubble? 2-3 layers, hold it in place with a bungee cord. I have a Weigelia My Monet, which is beautiful every year.
That is a nice one.
And a no name hydrangea.
There you go. Thank
and
you.
It works.
All right.
That's an idea.
Thanks for
bubble
the
wrap. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, man. Carrie on Facebook says she planted arborvitae in her yard this year. How does she care for them this winter? She hasn't watered for a while, should she?
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do for any evergreen to get it through our winters unscathed is to soak them thoroughly in the fall, and it's not too late now because the ground still isn't frozen. You want to get an evergreen fully hydrated going into winter because once the soil freezes, they cannot take up any more moisture. And they still can lose some moisture, you know, because there's wind and sun and all those things. So get them fully hydrated. Another thing is to mulch the root system below the plant as best as possible so that it keeps the ground from freezing for as long as possible. Don't pile that mulch up on the stem, though. That's a no-no. But so those two things should all you need to do. And, of course, arborvitae are very well adapted to our climate being a native plant. So I don't think you'll have any problem at all if you do that.
Let's go to Lori in Wheeler. Lori, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was wondering when you want to keep squash or pumpkin seeds, how do you... prepare them and store them Mm-hmm. Right, so they'll be ready to grow.
Sure, you bet. Mm-hmm. So I would wash off any of the pulp that might be on them, and then let them air dry, you know, for at least a day or so. And then when you store seeds, cool and dry is what you want. So once they're nice and dried out, put them in maybe a like a sandwich baggie or whatever, label them good, and then put them in a cool place in a basement or a refrigerator would be probably ideal. And then they should be good to go for next spring when you plant them.
Okay. Is it better like paper or plastic to store them in?
I think once they're nice and dry, I would say probably put them in like a plastic baggie, and then you could put them in a paper bag too. But whenever we purchase seeds for the garden, be from large seed companies, 99% of the time they're in a little coin sized envelope with a Ziploc, you know, to keep them, you know, because there is moisture in them, right? Which is important for the viability of the seed. So it isn't like you want to put in a dehydrator and force out all the moisture, but we want to get the moisture that would allow fungal spores to germinate and grow away from it. So if you do that, that's exactly what you're accomplishing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Join in yourself at 800-642-1234. Give a call. You know, I wanted to go back to lighting because you guys at Olbrich do a fantastic job with lighting.
Yeah.
And people can, you know, the average homeowner can do some of this too.
Oh, absolutely. Landscape lighting is something that I've been into for quite some time at the garden. And we've been lucky enough to work with Reinders, a Midwestern horticulture supply company, and FX Luminaire, which is another, they produce these landscape lights of really nice quality. And we're actually considered a test site for them. They're out in San Diego, so it doesn't get too mm-hmm. cold out there. So they mm-hmm. wanted somebody in a cold climate, which is us. And we have developed this landscape lighting system literally through the entire garden now. And if anybody has been out to our Art and Light show, Gleam, you'll have experienced it. If you haven't, come on out and see it because it's, you know, you can come and enjoy it every night. Just get in the doors before the lobby closes and there's a turnstile at the end of the building you can get out. But at this time of year, it gets dark so early.
Right.
And it's even earlier up until December 21st, I guess. So I really appreciate landscape lighting to extend the viewing of the garden. And in my home garden, I have a full system both in my back and front. And now with LED lighting, you can do it with just a fraction of the energy that we used to use when we had to use halogen bulbs. And so a standard lamp fixture uses 4 watts. So you could have 10 out in your front landscape or back, or 15, and you're still not using the same energy of one light bulb, you know, the old standard incandescent 60-watt light bulb in your house. So they're amazing, and it's all low voltage, so anybody can install it. You just have to have an electrician put in a GFCI outlet that you put your transformer in, and then you go. And so, I mean, if there's professionals out there, most landscape contractors install it, or, you know, just look that up on the internet or whatever, but it's certainly something you can do if you're a DIY person. I've done my entire system at home, and I love how, like, at this time of year with the holiday lighting, how that landscape lighting ties in with the holiday lighting.
Oh,
and you can
sure.
just do, it's really a nice thing with it. So, yeah, come on out to the garden to see it sometime. I always do. I'll have a walk coming up this winter, too, and I do at least 4 a year in each season. And so take people around and show them and explain how it works and all that good stuff. So, and we have other professionals teaching classes on landscape lighting as part of our adult education program, too. But it's cool. And it you know, the winter is my favorite time, actually,
it's
for the
beautiful.
Lighting. Because it just shows you plants in a whole different way. You know, you really appreciate the structure of the branching and, you know, the fruit. And then after a fresh fall and snow, oh, my God, there's nothing
better. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff.
Pat in East Troy, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, I'm glad you're here because I have a question that I may have to act on it between now and next summer.
Okay.
I have a grafted combination tree. It still is bearing fruit for Paul of Plum, which is just decorative, and the apple tree that was meant to be its daddy has started producing the best apples I've ever tasted, and I would love to take a cutting and make that apple tree into I'd like to make a companion apple tree. Is there any way that I can do that?
Yeah, really, the easiest way to do something like that would be grafting. And so I don't know if you want to try to tackle that yourself or not, but I know we teach a grafting class at Olbrich. I'm not sure there's one on the docket for this spring or not. But look around. I'm sure there's somebody in your area. Oftentimes, apple orchards will do a little grafting workshops, that sort of thing, too. And it's pretty easy to do, especially apples. That's the easiest thing to graft. And when I teach my grafting workshops, we always use crab apple or the edible apples, and we buy rootstocks online. Again, you can buy them. Usually they're bundled 10 to a package or something. And then just graft them. Rooting them would be harder, for sure. If I've never rooted apple, though I've never even tried, because grafting is such a great option. And then you can graft it onto like a dwarfing rootstock, like an M27, which is really, really dwarf, or you can get it on any type of rootstock you want to get that tree going. And oftentimes when they're grafted, they also bear fruit a lot sooner. They're more precocious, which is an added bonus. So that's the way you'd want to go.
Mm-hmm. Very encouraging. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Join in, 800-642-1234. I've got to tell you, my lime tree is just full of blossoms right now.
I can almost taste the gin and tonics right at the moment, thinking about it.
I can't imagine if I had all those flowers turned into limes.
Yeah, well, then you'd be making mojitos, probably.
I'm telling you. I'm really looking. You know, it's so much fun to have that, and in the bedroom, and it smells good.
Oh yeah, they're very fragrant, aren't they?
Oh, I'm.
How old is Limey at this point, you suppose?
Oh, seven years old. I've had it.
Cool.
But Limey's been produced. She's been producing limes for.
I've heard you talk about her on your show a number of times. I'll have to meet her in person sometime. Maybe over a gin and tonic.
Over a gin and tonic. And I'd say somebody asked me last 2 weeks ago, somebody said on the show, I said, well, you know, have you got any blossoms? I said, well, not yet, but they're going to be popping here in about a week or two. And sure enough, they are.
Nice.
Kate emailed to ask, when should she prune grapevines?
Oh, I think typically most people prune them, early spring, before they start producing any leaves. I'm not a great pruning expert because I know there's quite art to it.
There's a great UW Extension bulletin that's entitled "Growing Grapes in Wisconsin," and it's an older bulletin, but it's still right up to snuff.
That's the one you want to get. You bet.
You could go to the Learning Store, learningstore.uwex.edu, or just put in UW Extension Learning Store.
You bet.
It'll pop up, and then you'll find it. Just do a little searching around.
And again, I've often seen wineries or Olbrich offer workshops on that sort of thing, or classes. And of course, the Garden Expo coming up, right? In February, they always have somebody talking about grapes and pruning and all that good stuff and making your own wine. So check that out.
Yep, for sure. And then, let's see, I had another one that I wanted to bring up from email, I believe. Bob in Beldenville just received two small flowering seedlings, crabapple or viburnum hawthorn types, from Arbor Day Foundation.
Wow, it's kind of late in the season.
What should he do with them? He He has 5 acres on a small farm, plenty of cold storage and outdoor space, and a sandy soil. So he's got the right, probably, kind of soil for
right
what he's got there.
Well, if the ground isn't frozen, it's certainly not too
Stick
late to
in.
Plant them. I would, if you get them in now,
water them in.
Yep, man. Water them in, maybe mulch them, and then if any, like crab apple would be pretty attractive to rabbits or deer.
Yeah.
That's the thing you might want to. Protect them with some chicken wire or something around each of them. But, you know, if you get them in now, then they'll start growing in tandem with, you know, our great spring weather, which is plentiful with rain and the temperatures are right for them to break dormancy and all those things. So if you have that option, that would be definitely the best.
Yeah, I like that idea. As long as the ground isn't frozen, you can still get those
Oh,
in.
You bet. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What? Let's go back to some of the events that are going on at the garden, because I wanted to mention again the event that starts tomorrow.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Our holiday show will run from tomorrow through December 31st, I should say, first of the year. And it's a Western or cowboy theme, if you will. It's a lot of fun. You know, we always try to do something a little out of the ordinary because, you know, even if you go to some of our or throughout the state, if you go to a really nice shopping mall or something, they often have really nice displays, but they're pretty traditional and kind of the same thing. And like I say, they're nice to see. But so we try to, you know, break that mold a little bit and do something a little different. So this year's holiday show is all about sort of a Western landscape, and we have the traditional poinsettias mixed in with all sorts of different fun succulents and such, and it's a blast. And of course the holiday trains are part of it, and we have the Wisconsin Garden Railway Society that donates all their time to bring their own trains in, and they all have different fun trains, you know, from European looking things to old locomotives, and they literally have, you know, sound cards in them that sync to the speed of the train. I mean, it's crazy cool. Just the trains in himself, but I, being the plant geek I am, love what the horticulture staff has really put together this year. They're a great creative group, and it
really looks beautiful.
It's a lot of fun stuff.
Go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show, and you will see some photos. Kind of in the middle of the page, go down and find today's show, and there are some great photos of that. And you guys have a lot of other events and workshops and so forth that, I mean, we could spend an hour just going through all the ones.
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah, we have a full children's and adult education program. And, you know, of course, being a botanic garden, we most of them are botanically related, whether they be about plants or design or gardening or, you know, dyeing fabrics with natural plant fibers and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's plentiful. So if you go to our website, Olbrich, olbrich.org, there's a full list of everything we offer, and you can, you know, can sign up for all those things on there. And then all of our different events are posted as well. And there's always something going on. And if you're just tired of winter, not that we've had any winter yet, but it'll come, and we will be tired of it because we always are at some point. Come on and visit our tropical conservatory, the Bowles Conservatory, and get away from it all. And it's
I love that place.
Yeah, it's a little cheaper than hopping on a plane to Costa Rica or something.
It's like a dollar or something.
Yeah, it's not much.
It's not very much money.
No, and there's, you know, live birds, and it's
two
just
levels.
Fish.
Is it two levels, isn't
yep,
it? Yeah.
Yep. It's a great place to come and just kind of get away from it all for a while. So yeah, check us out this winter.
I think I've mentioned this on the show in the past, but I always tell my students, my UW students, that for the cheapest date, a wonderful date in the wintertime is to, especially like even a first date would be a good place to go, is the Bowles Conservatory.
There you go.
Spend a couple hours there in the middle of the winter, and then maybe stop at one of the local restaurants.
Oh, there's lots of great restaurants right down the street, too.
Right,
oh,
down the street.
Yeah, there
for
you
a
go.
Few bucks, you could have a lot of fun. Well,
perfect.
Let's back to reality here for a minute. Doris from Neillsville, and actually, we've had some students take take my advice.
Oh, yeah?
And had a really good time.
All right. There you go.
Doris from Neillsville called to ask how to take care of tree peonies over the winter.
Well, typically, I mean, we don't do a lot with them. I'll be honest with you. Once you get them established and growing, the tree peony is more really a woody shrub. So certainly don't cut them back to the ground. On occasion, I think we've had some munching going on by rabbits and such. So if it's a small plant, you want to make sure it gets off to a good start. You might want to just put a little hoop of chicken wire or something around it to keep it protected from the critters. But other than that, you shouldn't have to do anything. They've been perfectly hardy for us. The tree peonies are really pretty amazing. I've been to England a few times, and you're walking along, and all of a sudden there's something like 6-8 feet tall and wide next to you, and you look, and you're like, oh my God, that's a tree peony, no way. And so they do get big, but I've never seen them probably more than 3-4 feet tall and wide in Madison area, but that's still a big plant, and they are impressive when they're in bloom. I mean, they're just
wonderful,
amazing.
And Carrie, I don't know if I bring this up? Carrie on Facebook, we did talk about watering and planting in arborvitae, and you really, I think that's a good thing to do for a lot of our plants is to water until
We haven't had any appreciable rain, at least here in the Massey, for quite some time. And we've had bright, sunny days, lots of windy days, and those can dry plants out. And most of the plants that are dormant, no big deal. But the evergreens can continue to lose moisture through the winter and do lose moisture. So you want to get them fully hydrated. So giving them a good soaking before you put your hoses away, or maybe you have to use your watering can at this point.
Mine are in the garage.
But I must admit, I did pull out watering cans this last weekend and get out there and soak my little, I had some little hemlocks I planted this year and some a little boxwood, and I wanted to get some water to them, and that's how I did it. Just a bucket here, 5-gallon bucket on each one. If they're small plants, it's probably a good start, if not enough. So, yeah, that's important.
Did you have any major disease problems this last year at Olbrich?
Well, we had a lot of moisture early in the season, if you remember, right? And lots of flooding in various parts of the Midwest. So with all that moisture comes fungal diseases typically.
Yeah.
So this was one of the worst years and I can remember for cedar apple rust and a lot of the fungal diseases because of that early moisture. Now, I wouldn't trade it in for a dry season for sure, because the plants really did have a good season because of all that rain. But, sometimes you get that sort of thing going on, and we just ride it out. It's typically those diseases are certainly not fatal by any stretch. So we don't spray pesticides all over and such. We just ride them out and write that year off. So, yeah, a lot of our crab apples were defoliated by, September, pretty bad looking. But they're fine. They'll be looking great next season again, and we'll take what Mother Nature gives us then. So
yeah, there we go. Well, I tell you what, we are out of time. It's always fun, Jeff. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I'd love to. Always a pleasure, Larry. And, of course, I'm coming back for Limey's production of limes and my gin and tonic. So.
There we go. Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We don't have him scheduled, but he'll be back, and we'll talk with him again next week on Garden Talk. Melinda Meyer's back to talk about caring for those holiday plants, so I hope you can join us for that. And on Monday, Peter Green will be back with us to share some computer-related gift ideas. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.